Hi, I'm Susan Weisbauer, co-author of The Well-Trained Mind.
And I'm Susanna Jarrett, editor at The Well-Trained Mind Press. And we're talking about education for all parents and for all children in all sorts of settings. Today, as we get into season two of the podcast, we're going to be talking about the nuts and bolts of teaching writing. Our theme this season is kind of diving into nuts and bolts of teaching. And so we are going to look at a classical approach to teaching writing stage by stage and talk about how we can teach writing in ways that are developmentally appropriate for students of different ages and learning stages. And Susan, I know this is something you've written about a lot. You have curriculum you developed around this. You have workshops you've built. So I'm excited to get your thoughts on teaching writing stage by stage.
Sure. And you know, I think that writing is probably where the rubber hits the road in terms of choosing the correct teaching method more than anything else. You have to appreciate the complexity of teaching writing. When you're writing, there's a skill you have to develop. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out how to write. And then at the same time, you have to come up with content. Mm. And these are actually sort of two different things, right? So coming up with something to write about and having something to say about it. And then the somewhat different skill of actually getting that down on paper. And I always tell people, don't underestimate how difficult that is. It's right. As if you're a beginning piano student, and at the same time that you're learning how to move your fingers, hit the keys, and do two hands at the same time, you're also being asked to compose your own piece simultaneously.
Yeah, right. That sounds tricky.
Yes. I mean, can you imagine how incredibly difficult that would be? And so, of course, we don't ask people to do that. We don't ask students to do that. We give students books of pieces that are already composed that they can, so they can practice their, you know, their finger skills. And we don't ask them to compose until much, much later. It's interesting. Learning how to compose a simple piece is actually a standard part of piano instruction, right. But it's not something you get to until you've learned all your five finger exercises and you could use both hands at the same time without freaking out.
Right.
So I have a little graph that I use when I talk about teaching writing, and we'll put it in the show notes, Susanna. I'll send it over to you. And I call it the current state of writing instruction. And there's a line across the middle of this that I call the line of competency. And above the line of competency are maybe 30% of our students. Mm. There's of those 30%, maybe 10% of them are way above the line and they love writing.
Right.
They've always loved writing. And then there's sort of a steep slope off to the next 20%, which is, I know what I'm doing, right? Then we sort of cross the line of competency, and right below it, there's this vast number of students that are, I can do it if I have to.
Right.
And then there's another sharp drop off to, please don't make me do this. I would rather chew off my own arm. And then down at the bottom, probably 10 or 15% of students just go into silent and tearful despair. And that's not good percentages.
We want
the majority of our students to be, okay, we're going to not make all of them love writing, but we want them to at least be at, I know what I'm doing. This isn't freaking me out.
Right.
So what I want to suggest as we start talking about writing, and I'm not here describing a curriculum, by the way, I'm going to describe a method. Mm-hmm. Although whatever curriculum you're using, you should definitely think about, you know, where it falls into these principles, what its relationship is to these principles that I'm going to describe. But I want us to approach this in a classical way. Mm-hmm. All right. That means what we want to do is see if we can tackle this challenge of getting more kids up above the line of competency by applying some of the principles of classical education. And I'm probably going to spend most of my time talking about the grammar stage because that's where you really lay the foundation. And I feel like that's where most writing programs tend to break down. And Susanna, I don't know how many elementary writing programs you have looked at. I've looked at many.
Right.
And I feel that they tend to use what I would call an inspirational model of writing, which is to say, you give students things that they're interested in and you just have them write and write and write and write about them. I actually had a colleague in the composition department at William & Mary when I was teaching freshman composition there to college students who said this explicitly. The way you teach kids to write is you give them high interest subjects and you have them write and revise and write and revise and write and revise. The problem with the inspirational method is that it treats writing in the same way that it treats spoken language. Mm. So I have four kids. If you talk to a baby, the baby will learn to talk back.
Right.
Right. There's this deep inner, you know, impulse to learn how to do that because speech is natural to human beings. The same is not true of writing. If you expose kids to good writing, it does not follow that they will write. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a false analogy in a lot of inspirational writing programs that says children will learn to write if you just give them the opportunity. And what that misses, and I'm speaking here as a historian, is the fact that writing is not natural.
Yeah, I think writing is a skill, and I think it's more similar to a subject like math than we may at first realize, in that I think it's usually recognized that a student needs to learn the basics of math, learn arithmetic mm-hmm. before they can move on to doing algebra. They're just things they've got to know. And you can't just throw math at a kid and they'll just understand it eventually. If they look at enough math worksheets, some kids actually might just because they think that way. But a lot of kids need explicit, very basic instruction and step-by-step instruction. And if you get to the logic stage and they can't do the math there, there's only one thing you can do. You have to go back to the basics. And I think that the importance of foundational writing is sometimes missed in that inspiration model, and that you're not recognizing the importance of those basic writing skills.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. And there's also, which I think we'll come back to once I talk a little bit more about the grammar stage, there's also this misapprehension that accomplishment in elementary writing is shown by kids writing a lot, doing
right.
lots and lots of writing. And that's not what you should be doing. So, you know, to go back to this idea of writing being unnatural, you have to remember that although we've been speaking for as long as we know that we've been on this earth, writing is something that came along fairly recently. Mm-hmm. Civilizations endured for millennia without ever having to write anything down. And the genesis of writing is actually in accounting. The earliest forms of writing came about in order to keep track of how many cows you sold and whether or not you'd gotten paid. So as writing has developed, we really need to think of writing as almost a separate language. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if that isn't clear to you, look at any transcript of spoken language, like court transcripts or even transcripts of radio interviews. People who sound perfectly intelligent and normal when they're talking, when you take that and put it verbatim down on paper, they sound illiterate and stupid.
That's interesting.
Because, yeah, writing is a different kind of code.
Yeah.
So whenever you're learning something new and difficult, and let's just accept now writing is a new and difficult thing that isn't necessarily natural. Some kids do absorb it naturally, and I feel like that tends to obscure the problem mm-hmm. because like that 10% of I love writing kids that I mentioned, they just pick it up. That
right.
happens, but that's not the majority of students. You've got to pull the task apart because one of the principles of classical education is that you never do, this is just good teaching generally,
right.
you never do two new and difficult things at the same time.
Right.
So with writing, you have to recognize that there are two steps. The first step is you come up with an idea and you put that idea into words. Mm-hmm. It starts inarticulate, then you put it into words. Then you take those words and you put the words down on paper. Those are two different things. You know, to go back to my piano analogy, right. one is the composing, and the second is the playing, right?
And I think that is one of this right here, what you just said is such a key. And for folks, educators, homeschool parents, who teach writing, just to remember, because a lot of people who teach writing, they may naturally be writers. And sometimes when you're naturally good at something, it's hard to know, how do I break this down? How do I separate this and make it a little bit more simple? So those two things, this is such a key to the classical method of teaching writing that needs to be emphasized. This helps, especially those of us who just like to write, know how to break it down for students who struggle a little more.
And I think that's a really good insight of yours, Susanna, when, you know, I speak to a lot of classical schools and I spend a lot of time talking to, you know, the elementary language arts teachers mm-hmm. and all of them are word people.
Right.
They all probably were writing when they were 5 years old because otherwise you don't decide to teach it as a career.
Exactly.
So you really kind of have to twist your brain around and get in the mindset of someone who is not a natural writer. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, this was part of my beginning investigation into this. I'm a natural writer. I wrote my first novel when I was 8. It was terrible.
That's impressive, though.
But yeah, because it was just 8 years old. It was a very natural mode of expression for me. Right. But then I don't mean to be too generalize about gender here, but my first three children were all boys and none of them were natural writers, mm-hmm. which actually is pretty common that boys struggle a little more with this skill than girls. So how are we going to teach kids how to do these two things? Well, we're going to pull them apart. So what we're talking about here is not a particular curriculum. If you're using a curriculum, or if you're a writing curriculum, or your grammar program has writing exercises in it, I would actually encourage you not to do those, because in most cases, that's going to assume that students can already do these two things, put ideas into words, put the words down on paper. Before you go doing any of those kinds of exercises, you've got to do this foundational work. So you're going to pull apart the putting ideas into words and practice that separately. Practice it apart from any pressure to put words down on paper. And you're going to do that using narration, just putting ideas into complete sentences. Now, if you're familiar at all with a Charlotte Mason approach, which we did actually address last season, so you should go back and listen to our episode on different models of education. Charlotte Mason uses narration a lot, but it's for a slightly different purpose. The narration in Charlotte Mason is really to make sure that they're learning the material. Here we are talking about taking ideas and putting them into words that would make nice written sentences if you put them down on paper. So in science, in history, in literature, after they learn something, you're going to say, tell me the most important thing in what we just read, or tell me one thing that really struck you when you read that, or tell me something that you remember. You don't have to worry about whether it's the most important thing in the passage or not. Your goal here is to get them to answer you in a well-formed, complete sentence that, if you wrote it down, would look good on paper. If they give you back a fragment or they give you back a run-on sentence, you say it back to them correctly and have them repeat it back to you.
Right. So you're kind of killing two birds with one stone, because they are still retaining the information and showing you what they know, but it's not enough to just do that in spoken words. They're really writing in their mind and giving you a full sentence.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So you're doing two things at once. Ideally, once they come up with the sentence and you're happy with it, you then write it down for mm-hmm. them while they watch. So you see what you're doing here? You're using modeling. You're helping them put an inarticulate idea into words, and then you're modeling for them the second part of the process. And it's really important that you not ask them to write it down themselves, because if you do, you're going to get the shortest, most succinct narration on record, because they're thinking of how can I make this as easy as possible?
Right. And at that age, it's important to remember the muscles in their hands are still developing. So writing can be a physically demanding task on top of a mentally demanding task. And so giving them that freedom to narrate back the longest sentence they need to get their point across is a great way to help them practice writing how they want without that limitation of, oh, but I only want to write 5 words, not 10 words.
Absolutely. You're protecting their little hands. So yeah, so this is something you have to do regularly. I mean, every day in some subject, they tell you a sentence, and then you write it down for them. And then as you move on, you know, into second grade, maybe ask them to do 2 or 3 sentences. Mm-hmm. As they are more capable of coming up with good sentences, then you slowly make that a little bit more complex. So that's the first part of the writing process, taking an idea and putting it into words at a separate time. Because remember, we're going to pull apart these two difficult skills. Then they're going to practice taking words and putting them down on paper. The way you start that with a first grader is with copy work. You write out a sentence for them, not one of their own sentences, somebody else's sentence, and then you have them copy it. And as they copy, you remind them to keep looking back at the model. Make sure that the punctuation is correct. Make sure that the capitalization is correct. Make sure that the spacing between the words is correct. Have them do it in pencil so that they can erase and correct. You never want to make them copy a whole thing again. Mm-hmm. This can be for them like climbing up Everest. And then if you make them do it a second time, then they will die from, lack of oxygen. So pencil. And what they're doing in this first grade copy work is that they're developing a good visual sense of what a properly written sentence looks like, because we forget sometimes what a physical medium writing is. And there are a lot of kids who struggle with writing. When you look at their papers, the letters are all cattywampus and the spacing is weird and the punctuation is random and the capitalization is random. And it's because they've never developed that visual sense of what a properly written sentence looks like.
That's so interesting. You know, my mom did a lot of copy work with us, and I will admit it was not my favorite part of the day. But looking back, I see how much was happening when we did that. Like you said, we were ingesting, we were seeing what a good sentence looks like. We were reading high quality sentences and getting that kind of soaking ourselves in that as well. And we actually have a whole episode about the importance of modeling and copying where we dive a bit deeper into this in season one. It's episode 6, I believe. So if you haven't listened to that and you're interested, definitely take a look at that. But there's just so much happening when kids do copy work.
A lot of good things happening with copy work. And you can do copy work for all of first grade. There is no rush here. The more different kinds of punctuation and weirdly spelled words and things with quotation marks and all this other stuff, the more of that they do, the better equipped they are to go into the second part of the process, which is dictation. All dictation is copy work without the visual model in front of them. So you read them a sentence and you start it off short and you read it enough times to where they can repeat it afterwards after you. And then you ask them to write that sentence down. The purpose of this is twofold. Again, you're practicing that second part of the process, taking an idea and words and putting it down on paper. The first thing they've got to do before they can write successfully is they've sort of got to access their visual memory of what correct written language looks like and then reproduce that on the paper without having the actual physical model in front of them. And then the second thing they're doing is that they're learning to hold words in their mind long enough to get them down on paper. There's a pretty significant subset of struggling writers who can tell you what they want to write. And then you say, oh, that sounds good. Write that down. They say, what did I just say?
Yeah.
So actually holding words in your mind long enough to get them down on paper is a skill that has to be developed. So when you dictate, you don't want to do it word by word. If the kid forgets what they're writing, have them put the pencil down, repeat the whole thing from the beginning, have them repeat it after you, and then they can go back to it. But you don't want to feed it to them word by word, because that doesn't develop that retention.
Right. That's really interesting. I actually never thought about that before, that we don't do a lot in modern society where we're developing our memory or our kind of, I don't know if that would be short-term memory or working memory, but it is really important, because even when you're taking notes in high school or college, they're not going to stop and give it to you word by word. You kind of have to get that important sentence and then keep it in your mind as you're writing it down. You do the same thing when you're writing your own work. So that's a really interesting point.
Yep. So let's just review now what we're doing in first and second grade. You're having the student narrate to you, and then you're moving them from copy work slowly into dictation. If you're doing this effectively and regularly, I guess that's the main point, you have to do it regularly. By third grade, they can narrate to you, you can write it down, and you can dictate it back to them. And then they write it down. Now what you're starting to do is you're bringing the two difficult steps together into one. Student can take an idea, put it into words, take those words, put those words down in paper. And what you're aiming for is that by fourth grade, and it takes them varying amounts of time for this to click, you're aiming for them to be able to come up with an idea, put it into words, say those words to themselves, and then essentially take dictation from their own brains. And then you've completed the circle. Now they're ready to write. But this first step, this painstaking development of the skill, is simply not present in most writing curricula. And that's why so many students struggle, because there are so many that need this explicit step-by-step teaching of the process before you can give them assignments.
Right.
And instead, most writing curricula and exercises and grammar books just go straight to writing.
Exactly. Which it's important to note, you just mentioned by fourth grade, students are just putting these tasks together and writing sentences, and they can write them on their own. But it takes quite a bit of, might even say bravery on the part of the educator to follow this method, in that when you look around at all those other writing curriculums, at your kids' friends who are writing in different programs, by fourth grade, that's not what they're doing. They're being assigned, you know, research papers and reports and essays. And so if you get stuck in that comparison game, you can think, oh, wait, is my child behind? But I will say I've taught writing at different schools, and just giving kid essay after essay does not serve them in improving their writing. You know, I had students who could barely put a sentence together. And the assignment for them was to write an essay, but they couldn't write an essay because they couldn't write a sentence. And so it was endless frustration in writing class. The essays those fourth graders are producing are probably not very good for most of them. And they're not getting the basics they're going to need to be able to eventually write a great essay in ninth grade or 10th grade or 12th grade when it really counts. So
yeah, I would agree. And stick to your guns. Well, and I would suspect that a lot of those essays are done with such substantial help from either a parent or teacher that they're not really writing. They're assisted writing of some kind. Listen, I said that one of the reasons why I got so interested in how and why teaching writing works or doesn't work was because I had boys who struggled. And while that's true, at the same time that my kids were little, I was teaching composition, freshman composition at the College of William & Mary. Mm-hmm. And the kids who came out of these, you know, and William & Mary is relatively selective for, it's a state university, but it's one of the more selective ones. The kids who came out of these really well-regarded private schools in Northern Virginia couldn't write.
Right.
And, you know, I would say to them, well, what did you do for the last 18 years before you got to me? And that's what they did. They were just given long assignment after long assignment after long assignment. And none of that built the foundation. Skills, right. They needed to really, you know, master the process of writing. So, you know, when I talk to classical schools, the third and fourth grade teachers say, yes, thank you, please. We're giving the kids all these long assignments and they hate them and they whine and they complain and they drag their feet and they cry. But this is what the school says that we have to do.
Right.
And I say, I know you're in a really difficult position because the school has to prove to parents that they're doing a good job. And if what the parent sees is the kid bringing home a two-sentence narration in fourth grade, then I realize that's a tough sell.
Yeah.
So you've got to be able to articulate, if you're a school system, why you're doing it that way. Parents who are working with their kids are in a better position because the only thing you've got to deal with is your own insecurities.
Right. Right.
So, you know, however you do that, go see a therapist. That's always useful. But as a professional writer and a very experienced writing teacher, I am telling you that elementary grade students need to be doing narration, copy work, and dictation, and pretty much everything else can wait until they hit those middle grade logic stage assignments.
Right. And it makes a lot of sense, too, if you think about grammar stage in general, which we talked about a lot in the last season, being a stage in which students' strength is their capacity to absorb information, but their weakness is that they're not always ready for abstract or critical thought, or even so doing original writing requires a lot more abstract, critical, original thought. And young kids may just not be developmentally ready for that. And so aligning your instruction with where they are with developing their hand muscles, where they are with developing their brain, is going to make your life a lot easier.
Absolutely.
We'll be back after this.
Here at Well-Trained Mind Press, we are excited to announce our newest title, Writing with Ease Level 2 Revised Edition. This book includes 36 weeks of writing instruction and activities for enthusiastic and reluctant young writers alike. You'll find scripted lessons for the teacher to read, as well as interactive consumable pages for students to enjoy, which means that you can offer your student an excellent year-long writing program without worrying about prep work. The revised edition also includes a bonus creative writing lesson at the end of each week. Check out samples on our website, welltrainedmind.com, and use the code PODCAST at checkout for 15% off your purchase. Happy writing!
So there, before we move on then to talk about the logic stage, I want to recap, and then I want to give two sort of cautions. So, recapping. Narration. Copy work, dictation, regularly, across the curriculum. Don't do inspirational writing exercises with kids who are still struggling to get words down on paper. Take the time to lay the foundation and don't panic. That's the wrap up. So two things. First of all, there've been several writing programs that came out recently that push the exercises known as the progymnasmata exercises all the way back into the elementary grades. I would be very cautious about those. The pro gymnasmata exercises are, they're very useful. Mm-hmm. They are something that has been part of traditional rhetoric curricula for many, many, many decades, even if they weren't given that particular name. But those exercises really do require logic stage thought. Mm-hmm. They require kids to be able to compare and contrast, to be able to think about how to present ideas differently or to present the same idea in two different ways. And they require students to already have figured out this whole idea into words, mm-hmm. words onto paper thing. So I would be very cautious about using those for the elementary grades. I don't think that's really developmentally appropriate. Don't let the classical name fool you.
Right.
And then the second caution that I would give you is this. If a writing assignment asks a child for creative thought, mm-hmm. that is not going to be appropriate for all students. Again, as a writer myself and as an experienced writing teacher, I have become convinced that some kids write creatively and some of them don't. Mm-hmm. If you've got a little budding software engineer and the writing assignment is, as this is an actual writing assignment from a grammar book that I saw recently, a butterfly meets a clown on a bridge. What do they say to each other? That kid is going to have a complete and total nervous breakdown. And right. it's not because they can't write. It's because they don't imagine fantastic situations and then come up with dialogue to fit it. Right. That is a part of the brain that some people have. And honestly, some people don't. Mm-hmm. And it's not a flaw or a problem. It's just right. a reality. Every kid has to learn how to do decent expository writing. Mm-hmm. You can get through. And, you know, my brother is a very successful software engineer, never wrote creatively in his life. You can get through a really great adult life without doing a lick of creative writing. So if the kid is resisting writing exercises, ask yourself, is this requiring imaginative thought in a way that maybe they're just not designed to do? And I would say that journal exercises are often creative. Mm-hmm. It's asking the kid to basically tell a story about the day.
Right.
If it's anything other than a list of here is what I did today, then it's a creative exercise. And if your kid is resisting, just ditch it. Don't force them to do it.
That's really interesting. So keep those creative writing parts of the curriculum optional, because some kids yes. would love to talk about what would happen if a butterfly and a, what was it? Clown?
A clown.
Met on a bridge.
I actually had a really hard time with that assignment too. I was like,
That's a strange one. Some interesting parameters, but anyway.
Yes, exactly.
Some kids may thrive with that, but a lot may not. So moving into the logic stage now, kids are, they practiced putting thoughts into words and putting words onto paper. They can do that together at the same time mm-hmm. without too much trouble. Now, what are we looking at as far as developing that onward?
Right. Well, I would say that by the beginning of the logic stage, they should be putting words down on paper without too much trouble. That's mm-hmm. your number one diagnostic. And I would say if you've got a middle grade student who is struggling, go back, ask them to narrate to you, mm-hmm. see if you get good complete sentences. If you get a lot of uhs and stammers and fragments, then before you can move on into the logic stage assignments or the logic stage methods of teaching, you really got to go back and develop that skill. You can't just keep forging onward right. without going back to build those foundational skills. It's like building a bridge without any, you know, posts to hold it up. Also, try dictating to them, see if they can take dictation. If they can't take dictation, then that part of the brain, you know, circuitry hasn't been completed yet. You've got to go back and practice dictation with them. And I have recommended to parents with 10th and 11th graders,
right.
you got to go back and do narration and dictation because the kids panic when it comes to writing. You know, of course, by that point, they're thinking, but what about the college transcript? What about? And I say, look, even if they get into college, they're not going to be able to do their freshman composition unless you go back and take the time to do this. So never be afraid to go back and do the remedial work. But we're going to assume at this point that if you give the kids something to read and then say, write two or three sentences about what you just read, that they can come up with the sentences and get them down on paper. At that point, you're ready to move to the next stage of the process. The key here is that during the logic stage, you've got to teach them how to do on the thought level what you just taught them how to do on the sentence level. Mm. So on the sentence level, they had to practice first coming up with an idea and putting it into words and then putting those words down on paper. On the thought level, what they've got to do is come up with the things that they want to write about, and then they've got to structure those things in a logical order. They've mm-hmm. got to learn the development of a paper, whether it's a thesis statement and then an argument, or whether it's a statement of here's what this paper is about and then a summary of information, whatever it is, they have to figure out the order in which to put their ideas down on paper. Until they can do that, the writing process for them is like wrestling with a big old ball of yarn and you can never find the end, you know? Right. If you knit or crochet, you know that the first thing you have to do before you start your project is you've got to take your skein and you've got to wind it into an orderly ball because otherwise you keep losing the end and you can't move on. So the way that you're going to teach students how to organize their thoughts is, shocker, by pulling the stages, pulling the process apart again. You're not going to ask them to simultaneously come up with all this original content and then figure out how to organize it. Once again, that's doing two new and difficult things at the same time.
Right.
The first thing that you're going to do is you're going to let them practice organizing information without having to come up with that information in the first place. In other words, you're going to teach them how to outline what other people have written.
Right. When I was teaching a student at this stage one time, I thought at the time, they don't like writing. Let's just make the assignment fun, as fun as possible. Something you can write about anything, your favorite topic. You can make your own story. And the more freedom I gave this student, the more the blank page scared them. And it wasn't until I actually added scaffolding, added rules, added structures. Here's what an outline is. Here's how you organize one. Let's outline somebody else's essay first.
Right.
It was counterintuitive to me at the time because I like writing. I would want an open-ended assignment. I would want a more creative assignment. But for this student, the more rules we added, the more structure we added, the more we looked at actual models of other people's writings, the easier it became for him. So just throwing it in there to note that it may seem like this is more structured and rigid and not as quote, quote, fun as like a write a story. But for students who struggle with writing, it actually makes it way less scary to have an outline.
Yes, because if you've just got all this information spinning around in your head, how are you supposed to know how to organize it?
Right.
Here again, we rely way too much on a student's sort of intuitive understanding of how to present. How are they supposed to know that if they haven't seen it modeled? And here again, we come back to that classical principle that we hit in an earlier episode last season about the importance of modeling, that you don't ask students to do something until they can watch someone else doing it. And the way that you let students watch how a writer organizes thought is to have them outline. So you just start off by having them identify the main idea in each paragraph, the governing idea. So come up with a sentence that says, here's what this paragraph is about. And then I would encourage whatever grammar program you're using, use one that actually teaches proper outlining form so they know how to do the Roman numerals and then the capital letters and then the details. They need to practice outlining so that they can see how other writers develop information and they can start to recognize patterns. Like some writers will develop an idea by giving a comparison and a contrast. Here's what's the same. Here's what's different. Some will do it cause and effect. This happened and then this was the result. There are multiple different ways to organize an argument. And as you move on to the rhetoric stage, one of the things that a good rhetoric program does is give names to all of those ways of organization. But if the student has practiced doing outlining during the middle grades, then they've already encountered these different ways of developing an argument. So there's sort of two stages to this logic stage writing. The first is they start outlining and they learn to outline other people's writing. And I should add, because someone always asks this, you only outline nonfiction.
Right.
You don't outline literature because it works on different principles. But history, science, whatever it is that they're reading, have them outline 2, 3, 4 paragraphs. Once they can do that and it's not so much of a struggle for them to come up with an outline, then you do the Benjamin Franklin method. You put the outline in front of them, take the original away, and ask them to rewrite the passage from the outline and then compare it with the original. Once again, now you're sort of completing the process. They've come up with an outline, they're writing from the outline, but they're still not under the pressure of coming up with the content themselves. Once again, we're trying to pull apart composing the piece from practicing your five finger exercises, except now we're doing it on a thought level rather than simply on a sentence level. There is still no huge pressure here to do original writing.
Yeah.
We're still laying the foundation. This to me is one of the such valuable insights from the classical method is that you take the time to lay the foundation before you ask students to do original work. And in writing, it's just so important. Look, I'll say one more thing, Suzanne, as I'm running on, not giving you a chance to get a word in edgewise. If students are ready to go ahead and do original writing, go. You know, you don't have to say, no, I'm sorry, you have to do more outlining and copy work. No,
right.
Let them go ahead with it. But it is perfectly developmentally appropriate to allow them to continue to do this outlining and rewriting rather than a lot of original writing on through the middle grades, as long as it takes them to get those skills into place.
Awesome. Yeah. When I was teaching middle school, we had a curriculum that had an interesting way of doing this. And in some ways, it was kind of trying to fast track this process a little bit. Before students would write an essay, this was eighth grade, they would see the prompt and then they would read an already written essay for that prompt and they would paint it. And it was actually fun for them because they would get highlighters in different colors and they had to find the elements of that essay they were looking for. If it was a compare and contrast essay, they were learning what does a compare and contrast intro paragraph have to have? What does a argument paragraph have to have? And so on and so forth. And they would paint the different elements as they found them. And it helped them to see a model of good writing, but also what goes into that. How do I build that? And then they would write the essay on their own. Oftentimes those essays, it was still hard for them to apply it immediately afterwards. But I think that painting part of the exercise was really useful for students to see a visual of, okay, yeah, every compare and contrast essay that's clear and interesting has these things in the introduction paragraph. You've got to have these things. So it's something you can try if you're looking for a little more interactive, colorful activity for your middle school students.
I really, really like that's a great way of doing it. And it's just I like that because it shows that there are creative ways to do this, right? But the principle is the same, which is we're looking at what someone else did and we're copying it in a way that is going to make us better writers. You know, last season, I think, and it may have been in the episode about modeling, we talked about Gideon Burton, who does a lot of work with rhetoric. And he's got this wonderful essay on his website about writing during the Renaissance, which is generally acknowledged to be a high point in advancement of scholarship, where the emphasis is not on creativity until way, way down the line, that what was considered a rigorous classical approach was to spend all of this time copying the great masters. And I think you and I talked a little bit how in painting, this is still, you know, this is still something you do. You go and you copy the works of great masters. And that's been a missing part of writing education for a long time, because so many schools of education and curricula have gotten stuck on this inspirational model where the best writing is what you come up with on your own. And, you know, a Renaissance scholar would have said, no, actually, that what you come up with on your own is probably going to be inferior because you haven't absorbed enough of what the greats have done yet. So that's all you're doing here is you're sort of reorienting your emphasis towards learning rather than doing, which is totally appropriate for middle grade students.
Right. And I will try to find that essay and link it in the show notes.
Yeah. We'll link that in the show notes. So the curriculum that you used that had this painting of that, which I really like, overall, was it sort of following those principles, having them copy and learn?
No, I wish I could say it was. This is one of the reasons why I ended up leaving teaching is because my district in particular was moving towards having scripted curriculum that they purchased. But I think this painting activity was good, but it followed the inspiration model in that kids who didn't know how to write a full sentence still had to write an essay every other week, you know, and it was pushing a lot of students. I was teaching seventh and eighth grade to do things they weren't developmentally ready for. And it was kind of trying to fast track this process. Okay, well, we'll paint it first and then you can go do it. Then you can go write a whole essay. But I think you can't fast track it all the time. You have to take the time to learn the basics. And I wished I could just take 2 weeks and just stop and teach how to write a sentence, teach the parts of a sentence, teach, you know, these simpler things that the kids had just never gotten. But I had someone popping into my class to make sure I was on script. And that was very frustrating for me because we just didn't have enough time to go back. And you cannot move forward until you have the basics. And that was kind of the lesson I learned throughout those 2 years of using that curriculum, is that the students who didn't have that basis, they were never able to catch up under that fast track method.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I see a lot of that in my college freshmen. When they get into college, they still haven't figured it out and they're super frustrated. And to write even a 2-page paper has become just this chore because they don't know how to do it, you know, because it's so frustrating to try to do something that you don't really understand. You sort of like, you know, thrash around with it and hope that you've done something vaguely acceptable, but you're not really sure how. And that really produces students who hate writing, which I think is a big explanation for all those people below the competency level.
Right. And one other thing that this curriculum, I think, was lacking in was not teaching the explicit Roman numeral style outlining. Sometimes I would just add that in and it made such a difference because there's something about learning how to actually create an outline with the proper method using the Roman numerals that teaches kids how to think logically as well. There's nothing as logical on paper as an outline. And I love outlines. Whenever I'm thinking through something or learning about something new now, I just create an outline of the things I'm learning. But teaching outlining the explicit, you know, Roman numeral 1, A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, is actually really, really powerful. And you mentioned that, but I wanted to reiterate that that's something that was missing.
And I'm glad you brought that back up because there are a number of writing curricula that use mind maps instead. So a mind map is you put an idea down and then you sort of like you go off from it in little like with lines and circles with all the different ideas then that you want to investigate. And a mind map can be a great brainstorming tool, but it's not a great writing tool because it doesn't tell you what order to put those ideas down in, right? It doesn't grab hold of that end of the piece of yarn for you so that you can unwind it, you know, and know where you're going from there. So it doesn't really solve the problem of what do I say first? What do I say second? What do I say third? Which is where so many students then, you know, freeze up.
And I think mind maps fall right back into that category of some kids who are more creative are going to be like, yeah, give me the colored pencils. Let's go. Let's mind map. Yeah. And then students who struggle with writing more are going to be like, wait, say what? Mind map?
Right. Well, and I don't have any problem with mind maps.
Right.
I mean, if a kid wants to do a mind map or finds it useful, that's great, but don't stop with the mind map. Mm-hmm. Then say, okay, let's do our outline now.
Yeah.
What are we going to say first? What are we going to say second? What are we going to say third? Because that's such an important part of the process. Well, Susanna, I think we've gotten up to high school.
Woohoo! We made it to high school.
We made it to high school. Well, you know, if you're a parent, know that, how should I put this? I'll say exactly what I want to say and then I'll qualify it. It doesn't really matter what they write in middle school. It does, of course, matter what they write in middle school.
Right.
It matters in terms of their skill development. What I mean is that nobody's ever going to look at it.
Right.
Nobody's ever going to see it. Nobody's checking up on you. Nobody pays the slightest bit of attention to grades or how much they've done. You should breathe and think of grades 1 through 8 as preparation, you know? Chill out. Don't ask them to do too much. Make sure they are confident. Make sure they've got those basic skills into place. Mm-hmm. Because if you go into 9th grade with a student that has outlined tons of different great texts, can get those words down on paper, knows how to write from that outline, that student is 100% ready to jump into rhetoric and they won't freak out or freeze up. And that's really what we want.
Take the time to get them there because nobody but you is going to care that they're not writing long essays in the logic stage.
Nobody ever says, gosh, I really wish I could read your kid's 8th grade research paper. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, and whenever I do this workshop, once we get to high school, I'm like, well, okay, I don't have a whole lot more to say. And the truth is, I don't, because now there are so many good rhetoric programs out there. We recommend a few in the Well-Trained Mind. We can put a couple of recommendations in our show notes. Now is the time for more of a formal curriculum that walks kids through, here are the different ways you can develop an argument. Here are different techniques you can use. Here's how you document. Here's where you go for information. But all of those things And I definitely would recommend a formal curricula in high school. I think that structure is very, very important. But the kid can't do a formal curricula until they've got these grammar and logic stage skills down. So that's why I say grades 1 through 8 is really where you've got it. You've really got to reshape the way you're thinking about the writing project so that when you get into high school, they can do it.
Right.
You know, now, as well as the writing curriculum, they should be doing a formal rhetoric program or a formal composition program at this point. They should also be writing short compositions across the subject areas, 2-page reactions to literature, 2-to-3-page arguments about history, 2-to-3-page information summaries about science. The programs that they're using should have suggestions for topics. Suzanne, I believe you're going to link in the show notes. I do some longer explorations of how to do this in high school. So there's some more guidance there. But the point here is that now they can write.
Right. And so this is where they get into practicing. And I like that you said you can kind of spread that out across the curriculum and that they're writing these 2-to-3-page papers and they're getting that practice in. They know how to do it and they're writing. But because they know how to write, all that writing practice is actually helping them and not helping them cement bad habits. You know, they're cementing good habits and practices that they've developed over the last few years.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. So that's the writing process. Susanna, I believe you've put together some tips. If you want to share them with us, then I can react with anything else that I want to add.
Yeah, so this is kind of to wrap up. We've talked through pretty much all of these things. But if you have a student who struggles with writing, we have 6 tips, things to think about as you are trying to support them and not have writing time be the worst part of your day. So tip number
one. I like this goal.
Right. Tip number one is to go back and review. Even if your student is in the logic stage, even if they're older, if they're in high school, but they can't write a grammatically correct sentence, remember, it is worth it to take the time to build the basics. Tip number two is to recognize that, especially for younger students, writing is both a mentally and physically demanding task. It's a lot. So have grace for these students as they're building these skills. And that falls right into tip number 3, which is to demand quality over quantity.
That's absolutely true. And let's come back to quality over quantity in 1 minute, because I want to add something about that writing being a physically demanding task. I can't think of a single writing curriculum that doesn't require too much handwritten work for young students. And you have got to remember, or at least look at, the amount of physical writing that they're doing across the curriculum.
Right.
So if your first and second graders are doing like math worksheets, that's almost going to eat up their writing muscles for the day. You know, I always say, and I say this particularly to teachers who in classrooms are under a lot of pressure to have students do too much physical writing. Your little first grader comes into the classroom and imagine that he's got a certain number of nickels in the jar. And some kids bounce in with 20 nickels in their jar and some of them come in with 3. And that's just a matter of maturity. It doesn't have anything to do with intelligence. It doesn't have anything to do with preparation. It's just a matter of how fast their bodies are maturing. When your little kid with 3 nickels in the jar sits down and writes his full name at the top of his morning sheet, that's 1 nickel gone.
Yeah.
And then he does 3 addition problems. That's the second nickel gone.
Right.
And then you start him on grammar and writing, and he's almost finished. He is almost done.
Yeah.
So in first and second grade, do as much work as you can in math and in science and in history orally. Yes, they need to know how to write their name, but they shouldn't be doing written worksheets in grammar, in science, in history, in math. Not if you want them to have any strength left over to do their copy work and their dictation, which is so important. So just be very aware of that. Don't push it. Look out for signs of frustration, which of course, crying is a sign of frustration, but so is breaking pencils, throwing pencils, dropping pencils, falling off of a chair, doing that thing where they write really, really hard and break the point of the pencil. These are all signs of frustration. They can't tell you why they're frustrated, but they're uncomfortable. So, you know, be aware of those and be alert to them.
Right. And that falls into the demanding quality over quantity too, because remembering and having grace for the fact that they have those limited nickels in the jar will lead you to not necessarily say you've got to write as much as possible, but to look at what are they writing? Is this meaningful? Is this assignment meaningful? Is this Are they developing the skills they need to move forward? And that takes us to number four, which is the assignments should be meaningful to them. I've always found that just, you know, pulling up, I don't know, writing, reading comprehension worksheet about bats in a cave is going to be less interesting to kids than aligning some of their narrations, at least, with other subjects. So, you know, explain to me what you just learned in history. Explain to me what you just learned in science. Those types of things are meaningful to them, and they're still practicing that mental writing across the school day as they're telling back what they've learned to you. And then as they get into, you know, middle school and high school, and they have more written assignments to do, you know, you can align those assignments with their interests, whether that's, you know, starting when I was a kid, we had a newspaper for the family that I got to write little things for, or, you know, a history assignment, a science assignment, things they're interested in versus just holding only as they get older, holding their writing practice only for a writing time. Of course, keeping in mind that as when they're young, you have to be careful not to ask too much of them throughout the school day.
Absolutely.
And then the next point, number five, is to provide more scaffolding rather than more freedom. So if your student is really struggling with a blank page, they may need help creating the outline for the first paragraph. They may need reminders for how to do that. They may need assignments that have more kind of rules and regulations on them versus open-ended assignments. And that depends on the student, but a lot of students will need that kind of explicit instruction. And then you can take those scaffolds away as they become more comfortable with outlining on their own.
I think if you can think of the need for scaffolding as a maturity issue rather than a learning issue, because it almost always is. Some kids need more repetition. Some kids need less repetition. Some kids just need to be alive a little bit longer before they can figure it out. You're not going to short circuit their learning by providing the scaffolding. You're going to, I mean, scaffold is such a great word. Mm-hmm. Scaffolding is to strengthen and, you know, to restore and to build up. And that's exactly what you're doing.
Right. You're not doing it for them by scaffolding, but you're showing them, you're providing them with the strength and the skills and the helps that they need to get where they want to be. And finally, across the stages, provide lots of models. We have a whole episode in season one, episode six, about the importance of modeling and copying. But from, you know, the grammar stage, they're doing copy work. They're looking at models of great sentences. The logic stage, they're looking at models of great paragraphs and arguments. And even in the rhetoric stage, they're still reading great writing. They're still working with models. Such a powerful way to support struggling writers. So those are the tips.
Yep, those are really, really great tips. So in our next episode, we're going to be talking to Julie Bogart from Brave Writer about how she does things completely and totally differently. And I'm actually really excited about that because we're not a one size fits all here. We're very excited for you to follow your students' lead.
I'm so excited for you all to hear that episode as well. In the meantime, if you're interested in any more advice on optimizing your instruction for students of different stages, you can check out Susan's videos about teaching writing in the grammar stage, her audio workshop, A Plan for Teaching Writing, or the complete curriculum that we publish based on this writing model, Writing with Ease. I'll link all those in the show notes. I do apologize that my audio was messed up for a good chunk of this episode. I am so sorry about that. It should be better next time. And that's all for today. Please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We love to hear from you. Your thoughts on classical education, home education, school education, or any kind of education that interests you, you can reach us at podcast@welltrainedmind.com. Thanks for listening.